Nutmeg against my chest, stroking her back with my fingertips. "Could we stop at the mall on the way home?" I ask Mom. "I need cardstock and a paper cutter." Jason needs so many words. Sometimes people laugh when they like you, but sometimes they laugh to hurt you. On the ride home from the mall, Mom says, "I can't believe Nutmeg ate Jason's card." I laugh with her, stroking Nutmeg huddled against my stomach. She loves paper almost as much as carrots. I rub Nutmeg under her chin, right where she likes it best. She hates the rumbling of the car, and only my touch stops her from shaking. I peek into the bag at my feet, a paper cutter, white cardstock, and a tin of 48 colored pencils, 12 more than the set I have. "Thanks for the new colored pencils." "You're welcome," Mom says. "I've seen you making words for Jason, and you've been babysitting a lot lately." I can't wait to get home and see those colors on the page. Aquamarine, magenta, lime peel, peacock blue, and the others. And I won't have to limit using my crimson and indigo pencils anymore. Now I have brand new, long ones. "Wouldn't you like to sign up for an art class?" Mom says. "I hate to see you spend your whole summer doing nothing." I meet her gaze in the rearview mirror. I'm doing things. "Mrs. Deshane tells me there's still time to register for yoga. Wouldn't that be fun? Or one of the bus trips? I'll think about it." Leaning my head against the side of the open car window, I pull in a long breath of warm clam flats. The tide is out, almost to the inner islands, and a lone man is digging clams. Far away, he looks like a doll bent over his rake, a bucket at his feet. Beside me, David is asleep, his head dropped over almost to his shoulder as if trying to cover one ear. He gasps a tiny sound, wrinkling his nose, and I wonder if it's the clam flats he's smelling or if he's dreaming. But I don't even know if David does dream. He's never told me. "David's asleep," I say. Mom glances in the rearview mirror, and her cheeks lift to a smile. Stephanie must have tired him out. Almost home, I see Ryan playing basketball with Christy in her driveway. She waves, but that doesn't untie the knot in my stomach. David wakes, stretching his legs long as he can, still wearing his seatbelt. Christy sets down the basketball and comes toward my yard, Ryan following. "David," I say, "go inside with..." Too late. Seatbelt undone, he's already out of the car, running to meet Christy and Ryan. "I'll take Nutmeg and your things," Mom says. "Send David in if you go next door." "But Mom, he doesn't have any friends, not like you have." She looks at me over her glasses. "Surely you can let David stay a few minutes?" I'm torn between all losing choices. David will scream if I make him go inside now. Mom will think I'm selfish if I beg her to take him with her. Then there's Ryan. I cross my arms and pick the one maybe choice. Maybe Ryan doesn't want to look bad in front of Christy any more than I do. "I'll be in my office," Mom says. Ryan leans against our fence and blows a bubble with his gum.
Gum?
David might not notice lots of things, but gum is something he never misses.
"Yeah, it's gum."
Ryan pulls a piece from the pack in his hand and gives it to Christy. He throws another at me. My hand shoots up to catch the gum before I can even decide if I want it.
"Can I have a turn?"
David asks Ryan. "I've been waiting for you to come home." Christy unwraps her gum. "I went to OT with David." I drop the gum in my shorts pocket. Then I had to stop at the mall.
"Can I have a turn?"
David asks again.
"If someone is holding something you want, ask if you can have a turn. That's the rule."
What's OT? Christy asks. I don't want to explain, but both Christy and Ryan are watching me. Occupational therapy? David works on writing, jumping, stuff like that. Ryan turns to David.
You can't jump?
If we were at the bus stop, I'd already be yelling, but Christy's forehead is creased in concern.
Of course he can. Jump, Ryan says.
David jumps up and down.
Stop it, I tell him.
Up and down, David jumps, staring at the pack of gum in Ryan's hand. Up and down.
Stop!
I grab David's arm, but he won't stop jumping. He lands hard on my foot as I'm reaching into my pocket, fumbling for my piece of gum.
Ryan, give him some gum, Christy says.
It's a miracle! Ryan holds a piece of gum out to David.
You're cured!
But when David opens the wrapper, there's nothing inside. He headbutts his face into my shirt.
It's gone.
You jerk! I scream at Ryan so loud, David bursts into tears. Get out of my yard and take your stupid gum with you.
It was just a joke.
Ryan pulls another piece of gum from his pack. But David has his arms wrapped so tight around me, he can't take it.
He can have mine, I snap.
We should go, Chris, Ryan says. I have to get home.
I'm sorry, Catherine, Christy says, her face white. I'll call you, okay?
Okay. I pull David up our porch steps and into the house, not stopping until the front door bangs closed behind me.
Mom!
Through the window, I watch Ryan gesturing, like he's explaining something. Probably telling Christy all the bad things I've ever said to him and leaving out all the reasons why. Christy nods, and that tiny yes bleeds the fight out of me.
Gum?
David asks. I study the hair on the top of his head. How can his outside look so normal and his inside be so broken? Like an apple, red perfect on the outside, but mushy brown at the first bite.
Can I have a turn?
I pull the gum out of my pocket and put it on the perfect top of David's head. He takes it off his hair. I watch him unwrap it and stuff the gum in his mouth, dropping the wrapper on the floor.
Trash goes in the garbage can, I say.
That's the rule.
I'm sorry, Frog.
I turn away, but David's hand holding the wrapper comes into my view.
I'm sorry, Frog,
he says, panic edging his voice. David gets scared when people don't answer him. And the first tiny pinpricks poke me, little guilty jabs whispering, he's doing the best he can. And I brace myself for the kaboom sure to follow, the full guilt avalanche, thundering down the mountainside, sweeping away houses, knocking me flat. I take the wrapper.
Okay, Toad.
Catherine, Mom says. He needs to speak his own words, but he won't if you keep encouraging him to echo. Unfairness punches me in the stomach. You let him ruin everything, I say. It's always about him. He needs more from me. Stop overreacting. I run to my room, slamming my bedroom door so hard, Nutmeg and Cinnamon dart to the far corner of their cage. Grabbing my sketchbook, I flip to a blank page and write words, bearing down so hard the letters cut into the page.
Unfair. Cruel. Hate. Ruined. Murky. Tease.
Embarrassed. My hands tremble as I write. They shake so much it doesn't look like my handwriting. I try to rob the words of their weight by concentrating on the letters. Nice, sharp T, round O. torn. But I'm not fooling myself. I know the power these words hold. I drop my forehead on my arms. My door creaks, but my head is too heavy to lift. Go away, I say. A cassette comes into the dark space between my arms and face.
I'm sorry, Frog, David says.
I do what will send him away. Around and around and around, I spin the cassette on my finger. David leans against my arm. I wish it had been Christy without Ryan, I say. Everything would have been different. Or if Mom hadn't.
You fixed it,
David says. I look down. The tape is wound tight again. As it plays, I watch David's lips mouth the words, every pause, every word, perfectly in time with Arnold Lobel's voice. His fingers flicker like blades of grass shivered by wind, fluttering their own silent dance. Who are you? I ask.
I'm David, he says.
Open closet doors carefully. Sometimes things fall out. As Mom reads, I sketch the scene. Harry sneaking down the hallway on a midnight search. I practice drawing perspective, angling the lines of the corridor narrower with each door to pass. I imagine David turning the doorknobs, needing to know what's on the other side, not even realizing the walls are squeezing in, tighter and tighter, the farther he walks. I flip my page to save him. Beside me, my word cards sit upside down on the waiting room couch, a tiny white pile. At home, I felt ready to share these words, but what if Jason tells me I'm being selfish to feel bad for me when David, and he, has it worse? And how much for shipping? The receptionist asks, the phone to her ear. Is there any discount if we buy 2 boxes? I yank the zipper open on my backpack to find a blank card. Maybe I have time to make new words before Jason gets here. That does seem a lot for 1 box of hearing aid batteries, the receptionist says. I lay a card on my sketchbook, but before I can choose a word, Carol rushes through the clinic doorway, her baby balanced on her hip. And there was such a line of traffic on the bridge, she says over Jason's head to Mrs. Morehouse behind her. Figures they'd have to raise it for a ship on the day I'm already late. Excuse. I write the word, quick as I can. That's always the way, isn't it? Mrs. Morehouse pushes Jason's chair across the carpet toward me, and Mom picks up her bookmark, leaving Harry still searching in the hallway. Jason smiles, his hair curling along his forehead and above his ears, no longer dangling past his eyebrows. Your haircut looks good. I slide my words pile under my leg. Too short. He nods toward the card in my lap. What word? I frown, sliding excuse into an empty pocket of his communication book. With no picture, the card looks rushed and cheap. My fingers itch to pull it out again. I'm sorry, I say. The rest of the words I brought aren't good words. Want bad words. Not that kind of bad, I say, a grin sneaking out. I mean, I was upset when I wrote them. Maybe I could make double for next week? He shakes his head. Want those words. I glance to Mom, but she doesn't look up from her magazine. And how soon can I expect delivery? The receptionist asks into the phone. Maine. Jason stares at me, touching an empty pocket in his book, his finger tapping a soft drumbeat. I pull a card from under my leg. Not even looking at what it is, I reach across and slide the word into a pocket of Jason's communication book. Murky. What? Drawing. Murky. What did I draw for murky? I ask. He nods. I wrote that word for a feeling, I say. But a feeling isn't always drawable, so I drew the pond where I go swimming. There's a raft, and we dare each other to jump off and touch bottom. You have to go way down, and the water gets ice cold. But the worst part is when you touch. The bottom's all squishy with old pine needles and mud that sucks your feet down, right to your ankles. By then you're almost out of air, and you start thinking maybe this time the mud won't let go, and you won't make it back up. But the rule is that you have to bring back a handful of that murky stuff from the bottom to prove you made it all the way. I expect disgust on Jason's face, but I see something else. Wishing. Is? Fun? I nod. Coming up makes it worth it. He sighs, and I realize he'll never feel the thrill of breaking the surface, fist raised, mud dripping down his wrist. How can someone live a whole life and never feel that? You said you write murky for feeling, Jason taps. What happened? I reach down to finger the word cards beside me. You know Christy, my new neighbor I told you about? On Tuesday, she came over, which would have been great, except Ryan came with her. He's the boy I can't stand. David wanted some of Ryan's gum, but Ryan teased him and everything was ruined. And the worst part, I whisper so Mom can't overhear. David thinks Ryan's his friend. He doesn't understand Ryan's only making fun of him. I add the words fast, cruel, tease, embarrassed. And I get stuck making it better when it all goes wrong. Hate. Unfair. Beside me, little yellow-white sand grains cling to the wheel of Jason's wheelchair. I wipe them away a few at a time and watch them disappear, too tiny to see fall. So I felt like that. I touch murky, stuck at the bottom of the pond, only this time the mud wasn't letting go. Sometimes, Jason hesitates, his fingers held in the air over his book. I wish die. Don't say that! Mrs. Morehouse startles. What's wrong? I look from Jason's finger on secret to Mrs. Morehouse sitting forward in her chair. He just surprised me, that's all. I flip through his pages to find words. I would miss you. Jason smiles. But why wish die? He shrugs. No. Word. Frustrating. Most. I roll one last sand grain, perfect and sharp, between my finger and thumb. I am. He turns the page in his book and points to incomplete. No, you're not. But I know what you mean. Sometimes I don't feel whole either. I find an empty pocket for torn. I feel like I'm ripping in half. One half wanting to run away and be a regular person with my friends, but my other half is scared to leave David because he can't make it on his own. Make word, please. I open my backpack and reach for a blank card. What do you need? Leg. Go. Very much. Fast. Run? He nods, and I scribble the letters, leaning forward, rushing across the top of the card. Jason taps. Sometimes. Asleep. I dream. I can run. Really? He nods. How does it feel to run? Strong. I struggle for the right words. And fast, and in a weird way, weightless. Like, if you could go fast enough, you'd fly. It's an amazing, free feeling. I squeeze my toes, imagining the slap of my sneakers on the sidewalk. Is that how it feels in your dreams? No. He looks away from me, his lips pressed together. How could I bring these words to comfort myself when they put that hurt in his face? I could push you around the parking lot really fast, I joke. That'd be close to running. Jason taps. Okay. My smile freezes. Okay? Sure. Why not? Out the window, a man in a gray sweatshirt walks down the gift shop steps. A woman opens the door to Elliot's Antiques, and a family comes out of the restaurant, laughing. Between the rows of parked cars, a seagull struts, looking side to side. Because there are cars out there, and tourists, I say, and seagulls. You can watch out for car, Jason smiles. Bird will move. I don't think. Tell Mom. I'll be right back. He stops his finger on. Please. I pull in a shaky breath. Mrs. Morehouse? Jason and I are going out in the parking lot for a few minutes. We're going for a run. I say the last part extra quiet. A what? She looks up from her magazine. A run? I step behind Jason's wheelchair and push. It rolls smoothly, easier than I expected across the carpet. Do you really think this is a good idea? Mrs. Morehouse asks as we pass her. I can't see what Jason taps, but she moves to open the door. Be careful, Catherine. She fixes me with a stern look. I grip the wheelchair handles as we go down the ramp, my muscles tight as rope. My palms feel slick, but I don't dare relax even one finger, afraid he'll roll from me. At the bottom of the ramp, we both let go a relieved sigh. I turn the wheelchair to face the parking lot. If this gets too wild, lift your hand and I'll know to stop, okay? Jason nods. Run. I jog, more a fast walk than a run. Jason's head and shoulders shake as I bump him over cracks in the tar. There's so much to watch out for, holes and rocks and sand near the side of the building. I stop beside the dumpster. Sorry, this is such a bouncy ride. Are you sure you want to do this? Run. Fast. I start again, pushing Jason's chair ahead of me. I run past the fire hydrant and around the parking sign, keeping a lookout for cars pulling into or out of the parking lot. Every few feet, I shoot a lightning-quick glance at Jason's hands. He doesn't pick them up, just holds tightly to his communication book. So I make the first turn, running faster. Clouds of seagulls take to the air in front of us, quarreling and shrieking. Running hard now, my feet pound the tar, the flap of seagull wings as loud as my breath in my ears. People are looking, but I try not to see them as real, just statues to run past. At the final turn, I see Mrs. Morehouse standing in the entrance to the parking lot, her palm out like a traffic cop, keeping cars from pulling in. I dash past the mailbox, the exit here sign, past Mrs. Morehouse. Leaning into it faster, harder, my feet slap the pavement until it comes, that weightless, near to flying fastness. Do you feel it? I yell to the back of Jason's head. But if he answers, it's only in his head. I run all the way to the clinic ramp. How was that?
awesome. I bend over to steady my breath. When I straighten up, I see not only is everyone in the waiting room standing at the clinic windows watching us, but a family on the sidewalk is staring, shopping bags in hand. And in several of the restaurant windows surrounding the parking lot, people have stopped eating to watch. Most of them have their mouths dropped open. Jason waves. A man in one of the restaurants gives a thumbs up, and everyone in the waiting room cheers, Carol holding her baby high so he can see. "One more time?" I ask Jason. He grins. "Excellent." And we're off. Past the windows and the dumpster, around the parking sign, seagulls billowing into the air at every turn. Strong, flying fast and free, we run. Sometimes people don't answer because they didn't hear you. Other times, it's because they don't want to hear you. Though my legs are tired, I run faster up my driveway, trying to put every feeling into words for Jason's cards. Fierce, hard, my sneakers slap the tar. Swift, brisk. I take off across the lawn, squishy, springy. But as I round the far corner of the house, my feet slow to a walk. Dad is kneeling in our garden, his back to me. Watching him, I think of Christy at her dad's for the weekend and Melissa in California with hers. Part of me wants to run up and hug Dad from behind or cover his eyes with my hands like I did when I was little. "Guess who?" I'd say, and he'd guess everyone but me, even though we both knew he was pretending because he'd give impossible answers like Queen Elizabeth or Little Bo Peep. Before I can decide what to do, Dad spots me. "Look, Kath." He twists a ripe tomato from the vine and holds it out to me. "Isn't this beautiful? I'm sure not many people have ripe tomatoes yet." I walk over and take it from him. "I bet we're the first." Dad's always proud we have tomatoes before anyone else. That's because he starts the seeds in pots on the kitchen windowsill while snow's still deep on the ground. I study the tomato closely, drawing it in my mind. It's so smooth I'd need dense color, layered until not even a flicker of white paper showed through. Alone, each of my colored pencils would be too bright, but blended I could make it look real. "People usually think tomatoes are red," I say, "but they're more red-orange with yellow-orange streaks, and there's even the smallest hint of purple here in the creases."
"Purple?" He looks over, his forehead lined with concern. "Is it mold?"
It feels stupid to be jealous of a tomato, but sometimes I think Dad likes them more than he likes David and me.
"No, it's just a shadow."
"Oh, good."
Dad turns a frilly leaf to check the underside. Standing above him, I'm startled to see more gray hair than brown on the top of Dad's head. "When did that happen?"
"Have you heard from Melissa lately?" he asks.
"I got a postcard last week. Her father took her to Disneyland." I roll my tomato between my hands, the prickly stem poking into my palm.
"Maybe you and I could do something special too. Just us?"
He sighs like it's the millionth thing I've asked him for today, instead of the first.
"You know we can't afford something like that."
"I don't mean Disneyland, just something. Me and you?" Dad smiles, but it's a worn-out smile that doesn't light his eyes.
"I'm sorry, honey. I've been dealing with doctors and customers and staff all week. I really need to stay home today and be quiet a while."
Watching him pick another tomato, I mouth words at the back of his head.
"But what about me? Maybe we could cook spaghetti tonight?"
He places his tomato with the others in the basket.
"These would make a great sauce."
Before I can answer, Mom yells, "It's 3:00. Dad frowns at his watch.
I'd really like to finish up here first, he calls to her. I'm almost done. In the kitchen doorway, Mom crosses her arms over her stomach. David has his shoes on already, and I have paperwork to do for my meeting on Monday. I'll be there in a minute, Dad shouts. The sound of Mom slamming the kitchen door makes me cringe. I'm torn between wanting to yell at him for choosing tomatoes over Mom and wanting to cry that he's choosing David over me. Maybe we could go to the mall? You heard Mom. I have to take David to the video store. Do you want to come with us?
No, thanks.
Maybe we could do something afterward?
Someday soon, he says. I promise.
I drop my tomato in his basket with the others. I know he's just promising to stop me from asking again. Walking away, I turn once to check if Dad's watching me go. Look for me. Staring at the back of his head, I imagine him turning left and right, searching. He picks another tomato. No toys in the fish tank. Monday morning, my heart jumps to see the minivan in the driveway next door when I wake up. I get dressed and eat my breakfast in little bites, so if Christy calls, I won't answer with a mouthful of cereal. At 9 o'clock, the phone rings. I'll get it! I yell in the direction of the kitchen where Mom and David are still having breakfast. Please don't let it be one of Mom's clients, or Dad calling from work. I wait 2 more rings, so it won't seem like I was waiting next to the phone. Hello? Hi, Catherine. It's Christy. I mouth, yes, to keep from squealing. Hi. I was wondering if you want to do something. I don't have to be at the community center until noon. Sure, that'd be great. Could we hang out at your house? Mine is crazy today, Christy says. Mom forgot to tell me the plumber was coming, and now I can't even have a shower. I'd like to say you can shower at my house, to be nice, but with David home, the embarrassment chances are too risky. Want to go swimming? There's a pool. It's a pond, but it's not far. There's a raft and a little beach that anyone can use. She hesitates so long, I ask, are you still there? I'll be over in a few minutes. In my bedroom, I tug open the top drawer of my bureau to pick a bathing suit. The blue one-piece is good for swimming, but not pretty. I love the purple and white bikini that looks like batik, but the top slides when I dive. So I'm left with the last suit, green with gold flowers, swimmable and not ugly. Though I'm hurrying, I take a couple of seconds to stroke on cherry lip gloss and pink eyeshadow and comb my hair. Maybe I'll try my hair loose today, parted a little on the side. With jean shorts over my bathing suit, my favorite beach towel draped around my neck, sunscreen lathered, and flip-flops on, I'm ready. Mom's still in the kitchen with David. Kneeling beside a pile of wet paper towels, she's cleaning a milk puddle from the linoleum. At the table, David swings his legs, eating his cereal. Christy and I are going to the pond, I say. I'll be back by lunch. Mom looks up from the spilled milk. I'm heading to the store. Would you like me to drop you girls off on the way? No, thanks. We'll walk. She gathers the wet paper towels. David, when you're finished, get your shoes on. We need to go to the grocery store and buy something for lunch. He looks up from his bowl of cereal at the table, milk drops clinging to his chin. And a video? Okay, but just this time. David bolts from his seat, pushing past me to drop his bowl in the sink. Watch out, frog, he cries, bits of cereal splashing on the counter. Say, excuse me, Catherine. When he doesn't say it, Mom gets up to block the doorway. Excuse me, Catherine, she repeats, looking over her glasses at David. The doorbell rings. See you later. I squeeze past David and under Mom's arm. Though my name's part of the conversation, it's got nothing to do with me. I race down the hallway to the front door, but as soon as I see Christy, I wish I'd picked the purple and white bikini. She looks pretty in a long t-shirt and sandals, her hair hanging over her shoulder in a single braid. Can I borrow a beach towel? She asks. I couldn't find mine. Sure, I'll go grab one.
When I come back to the living room with my second favorite beach towel, Christy giggles. There's a duck in your fish tank. Behind her, the aquarium cover juts out at a crooked angle. In the tank, David's rubber duck bobs along the surface, a goldfish mouthing his tail. Come on, I fake a smile, handing her the towel. Let's go. Outside, the air smells summery, of mown grass and warm tar, and from somewhere high in the trees, I hear a woodpecker rapping. David is gone with Mom, and I'm free, walking down the road with Christy. I've never been swimming in a pond, Christy says, only in pools and the ocean. It's fun. I make sure to keep in step with Christy. Much warmer than the ocean, at least in Maine. It's gooey at the bottom when you're out a ways, but that's only old pine needles and leaves. Once you get in, you probably won't notice a big difference from a pool. She doesn't look so sure. Approaching the corner, I can't believe how ordinary the bus stop looks in the summer. Only another bend of sidewalk. Christy slows, staring at Ryan's empty yard. Was I her second choice? Are there fish in here? Christy asks, kicking her sandals off on the sand. I follow her gaze out across the pond to the fringe of pine and white birch trees on the other shore. Only minnows come near the shore. On our side of the pond, there's a strip of sandy beach, but the far side has a steep, scooped-out bank tangled with bushes and the roots of trees. Once I overheard Ryan tell someone that there's a big fish that lives under the raft, I say, still smarting from Christy's long look at his house. But I've never seen it, so he might be lying. Christy wraps her fingers around her braid. Is it deep? Over my head, but not so deep I can't swim down and touch. Sometimes we dare each other to bring back muck from the bottom. Her knuckles whiten on her braid. But we don't have to do that, I say. Good. She walks to the shore, pulling off her t-shirt. Seeing her candy red bikini, I wish again I'd worn my purple and white one, even if I had to hold the top when I dove. I undo my shorts. I like your bathing suit. I wanted to wear the new one my aunt gave me, but I think it's with my laundry at Dad's. Christy points her foot, skimming the water with her toes. Standing in the pond, my ankles look crooked, cut by the water's surface. I study the waterline's ripple of distortion, wanting to capture it in my sketchbook. That's a bad part of living in two places. Christy shudders, stepping into the pond with me. I never have what I need at the right house, and Mom doesn't get it. This morning she kept saying, just wear another bathing suit, like it didn't matter. Watching her adjust the straps of her bikini top, I want to tell her I know how it feels to be split down the middle, too. Pulled between the regular world of school and friends, and David's world where none of the same things matter. And how I don't belong completely in either world, but... When someone is upset, it's not a good time to bring up your own problems. Christy takes a step farther into the water. I hate this bathing suit. The straps are always falling down. I'm in water to my knees now. I know what you mean. The top of my favorite bikini doesn't fit perfect, and it slides. It's never shown anything, but... Christy smiles. I had a bathing suit like that once. It drove me crazy. Stepping deeper, the cold tingles my thighs. I rub the goosebumps on my arms. It's always chilly at first, but you'll get used to it. I promise. Catherine, I'm sorry about the other day with the gum. I turn, but she's not looking at me. Chin down, Christy skims her fingertips across the surface of the water. David doesn't get jokes sometimes. The water feels warmer on my legs, and I take another step. Ryan didn't mean to upset him. He told me so. He didn't mean to upset you. The tiny waves created from Christy's hands moving the water make a freezing tickle on my stomach. He said, the bottom gets gooey here, I say to change the subject. If you dive in now, you don't have to feel it.
Plunging forward, my chest and shoulders scream with the shock of cold. I go under, breaststroking, kicking hard, until my lungs ache and I can't stay under 1 second more. Breaking the surface, my hair is plastered to my face. I tread water, pushing it away. Christy stands in the shallows, her hands tracing across the pond's surface. "Come on," I say. "It's not bad once you get in." She takes a step. "Are you kidding? It's freezing." "Not once you get used to it. I'll meet you at the raft." I love swimming in water over my head, cold emptiness under my feet, those sudden warm spots or icy underwater springs. Almost to the raft, I flip to my back and give in to the lightness of floating. Held by the water, I watch the blue sky, waiting for Christy to catch up. This is what I wished for, a next-door friend I could just come and go with. She's out of breath when she reaches me. At the ladder, I grip the sides and swing my feet up to the bottom rung. Water showers off me as I climb. "About that big fish?" Christy says, swimming closer. "What kind is it?" The air makes me shiver. I sit on the raft and wrap my arms around my knees. "It's probably just an eel." Her eyes widen. "I mean, it's probably not an eel, just a fish that looks like an eel." Christy scrambles up the ladder. "Yuck." I tuck my soaked hair behind my ears, wishing I had brought my hairband. I know without asking, Christy won't want to touch the bottom. She doesn't even seem to like the top of the water much. "Maybe we can lay out in the sun?" We lie on our stomachs, and I peek between the slats to the darkness below. The slight rocking of the raft, the slosh of little waves slapping the boards beneath, and the sun drying my back makes me yawn. I have to find my other suit. I look over to Christy fixing her shoulder straps. But if it's not at Dad's, I don't know where it is. She lays her chin on her arm. "I wish Mom wouldn't give up so easy. It's not like he had an affair. Maybe they're just taking a break for a little while?" "Maybe," Christy sighs. "Do you think there really is a fish down there?" The sadness in her voice makes me want to give her something, even if it's only pretend. "What if he is down there?" I say. "But he's magic, like in that fairy tale, the fisherman and his wife." Christy squeezes the end of her braid, drops of water falling off the tip, beating onto the raft. "I don't know that story." The sky catches a big fish, except the fish says he is really a prince under a spell. The man lets the fish go, but his wife sends him back to get a wish granted. I'd scream if a fish started talking to me. "Me too, but what would you wish?" "I'd wish my parents would get back together and be happy." She turns to me, her eyes worried. "Do you think that's two wishes or one?" "One." "Your turn. What's your wish?" I look down between the raft boards and imagine my always wish. My fingers reaching through the perfect top of David's head, finding the broken places in his brain. Turning knobs or flipping switches. All his autism wiped clean. But saying that wish brings trouble. "All people have a place," my third grade teacher said firmly when I drew a pretend older brother in the My Family picture to be put out in the hallway for open house. I tried to tell her it was still David, but I wanted him to be able to play with me. And since I was fixing things, I made him older so he could stick up for me. But I had to draw the picture over and visit the guidance counselor instead of going to music. "Why is it in fairy tales, wishes always backfire?" I ask. "If you want to change the subject, confuse the other person by going off on a wild, chatty detour. Like in The Fisherman and His Wife," I continue. "The fisherman's wife keeps wanting bigger things, and by the end of the story..." "Hey!" a voice calls. "Chris!" I sit up so quick, I scrape my knees on the raft. Ryan waves, standing on the sand at the shore.
Behind him, his bike rests propped against a tree. Christy waves back. Hi! I hope she yells at him to go home, but she says, Come on, Catherine! And does a running dive, heading for shore. I let her swim ahead of me. I do the breaststroke, dipping my face in and out of the water, so I don't have to see Ryan standing on the sand waiting for us. At the shore, I cross my arms over my stomach and walk to my shorts and towel. Your mom said you were here, Ryan says to Christy. Did you ask Catherine yet? Ask me? Christy smiles. Catherine, you know how the community center is holding a dance on Saturday? I nod. They asked me to help decorate, Christy says, and I was hoping I could help you decorate, I say, grabbing my towel off the sand. I'm good at making posters. Actually, I was hoping you'd like to go. Christy glances at Ryan. Me and Ryan and you and somebody, it'll be so much fun. Please say yes. I wrap my towel around me, tight as I can. I don't know anyone to ask. Ask Jason, Christy says. That boy you drew, this is your chance to ask him out. I open my mouth, but Ryan's smirk makes me close it. But that's not the only reason I don't tell. I don't dance. I slide my feet into my flip-flops. I'll teach you, Christy says. My dad works late a lot, so I don't think I could get a ride. My mom can drop us off and pick us up. On the walk home, Christy has an answer for every one of my can'ts. She'll even loan me clothes and do my hair. Ask him, she says. By the time she's heading up her driveway, Christy has cornered me into a stuttered, I'll think about it. In my room, I peel off my damp bathing suit and put on the first clothes I pull from my bureau, an old shirt and shorts that don't match. I comb wet snarls from my hair and watch Christy's minivan backing out of their driveway. Did Christy call me because she can't go to the dance with Ryan unless I go too? The minivan disappears from view. I turn to my bulletin board and the postcard from Disneyland tacked on the top. I wish it wasn't so expensive to call California. I want to tell Melissa everything and hear her say, It's okay, Catherine. But it'd take too long to explain. And maybe she'd be mad I cared so much about Christy being my friend. In my sketchbook, I try to draw my ankles distorted by pond water. But they don't look warped and interesting. They look broken. I write words in the white space beside the sketch. But after pond and icy, the only ones that'll come are guilty, complicated, hidden, and weak. I close my sketchbook. Solving one problem can create another. I look over the top of my sketchbook at Jason's mother standing alone. Before I can ask where Jason is, she opens the door and he comes into the waiting room. On his own. He has a new wheelchair with a joystick on the armrest. His fingers circle the joystick and the wheelchair whirs past the front windows, across the carpet, right up beside me. Wow! I toss my sketchbook on the waiting room couch. How wonderful, Mom says. He never wanted a motorized chair before, Mrs. Morehouse smiles at Mom. But lately he wants to do lots of things for himself. He's even doing his hand exercises again. Jason reddens, flipping open his communication book. And since his birthday is this weekend, Mrs. Morehouse continues, his father and I knew this would be the perfect present for him. This is cool. I lean close for a good look. How's it work? Jason positions his hand on the joystick, and the chair surges, a foot forward, then back. Catherine,
walk. Outside. Me too.
You want to take a walk? Outside?
I glance at his mother.
With me?
Take my cell phone. She opens her purse. Call here if you need help. The phone number is on those business cards at the reception desk. The receptionist circles the phone number on the card. But even with the number, the cell phone, two blank cards, and a pencil in my pocket, I don't feel prepared. What if I can't help him? Or he needs something and I can't understand him? I hold the door open, and on his fourth try, Jason makes the turn around the doorframe. All the way down the ramp, I hold my breath, repeating slow, slow, in my head like a prayer, so he doesn't go too fast and tip or fall. At the bottom of the ramp, I let my breath go in a relieved whoosh. Where to? Clusters of people stand near the shops, and the brick sidewalks look too bumpy and uneven for a wheelchair. I wish I could take Jason to Elliot's Antiques and show him all the bottles and old things, but there is a long flight of stairs, and the aisles are too narrow for a wheelchair. Water, Jason taps. You need a drink? Go to water. Between the buildings, waves glitter with sun diamonds. I scan the route for problems. Down the parking lot, watch out for broken tar in the sewer grate. Cross the street, easy. Go to the driveway at Otis's Hardware and use the little ramp to the curb, a sharp turn. Down the sidewalk in front of Coastal Marine Supply. Looks good from here. After that, smooth paths run all the way through the waterfront park. Home free. I glance back to the clinic. Mom and Mrs. Morehouse wave from the window. Okay, but we can't stay long. Your mom will be mad if you miss speech. Whatever. Speech. I walk beside his wheelchair and imitate speech woman. Well, Jason, I guess your day stinks, Footsteps pound behind us, and two women jog by, one on each side of Jason and me. One of the women gives Jason a soft-eyed, pity look. Watching the soles of their sneakers running away, I push my hands into my pockets, touching my pencil, the business card, and the flat-topped buttons of Jason's mother's cell phone. Maybe I shouldn't have agreed to go so far. As we reach the crosswalk, a car stops for us. I stare at the curls of hair on the back of Jason's neck as we cross the street. An old couple stands at the curb, the woman hunting for something in her purse. Excuse me, I say. We need the ramp.
Oh, sorry.
The man glances at Jason's legs. They move on, the woman still searching her purse. I walk ahead on the sidewalk, kicking away pine cones and rocks and sticks so his chair won't get stuck on them. When I turn back, Jason's coming up behind me, his fingers resting in sharp angles on his communication book, his eyes fixed on the water. It's beautiful, isn't it? I say. He nods. More than. Awesome. What? What word means more than awesome? Yes. Looking across the sun-dazzled waves, I have no word. I think after awesome, you're done with words. Make card more than words. Even though we're blocking the sidewalk and people have to step on the grass to go around us, I take a blank card from my pocket and write, more than words, across the top. Searching for something to draw, not even the ocean seems enough. No, picture. In his book, the card stands out against the others I've made, plain as a field of new snow. You're right, I say. This way it can be anything you imagine. The air smells fishy, a green-brown, deep water smell.
I choose the path winding along the shore, leading to a row of red-painted benches facing the ocean. Down the shoreline, a fishing boat pulls up to the dock at the seafood restaurant, and a man in a long white apron rushes down the gangplank to meet the boat. Side by side, Jason and I take up the whole path. A girl bumps my arm, rushing around us, walking two black poodles. "Sorry," she says over her shoulder. I whisper to Jason, "She's late for the dog show." Jason flashes me a grin. "Maybe that bench by the wharf?" Usually I love listening to the pilings creaking, purring boat motors, and the sharp kee-ow of gulls. But today my ears are full of the sound of Jason's wheelchair and the silence of people who suddenly stop talking as we pass. A man meets my gaze. He smiles, but I can only nod back, unable to let go the clench of my teeth. At the long town wharf, a seagull stands on twig legs, facing the wind, shaking his feathers dry. He reaches around to preen his wing as a group of preschoolers leans over the wharf railing, dropping rocks off the side. I hear snatches of voices as we come closer to the wharf. "You don't even need this, but it'll make you feel better." Reaching down, a girl puts a bandage on the little boy's elbow. Her head is bowed, but I know her hair, parted on the side, a strand separate from having been twirled. I fall to one knee on the path and dip my head to peer between the slats of an empty bench. "Was that boy in an accident?" the child says, pointing at Jason. "Did he get hurt?" I watch Christy startle, looking at Jason. She turns away quickly and touches her index finger to the child's lips. "Shh, it's not polite to talk about people." Jason backs his wheelchair up the path toward me, and I lean so his chair is between Christy and me. He stops, struggling to look over his shoulder at me. "I'm coming," I say. He taps, but I can't see his communication book from the ground, and I'm too scared to stand up. My shoelace is tied, but I hold the loops in my fingers, knowing when I let go, I'll have to do something. Why can't I just stand up and say, "Hi, Christy"? "Okay, grab your partner's hand, everyone," a woman yells. "Time to get back to the bus." I peek, enough to see Christy take the child's hand. She follows the line of children, stuffing bandage wrappers in her shorts pocket. I stand slowly. "I'm all set." At the empty bench closest to the wharf, I sit on the very edge of the wooden seat and watch Christy growing tinier the farther she walks down the pathway. Jason taps, and I tear my focus away from Christy passing the last street light at the edge of the park. "Catherine, pretty. Today." I nod. "It's a very pretty day." Jason touches my arm. "Catherine, pretty." My neck feels prickly. I rub it, looking down to a frill of seaweed, bits of rope, and a broken lobster trap caught between the huge rocks at the water's edge. What does he mean? Is he being nice? Or telling me he likes me? When things get confusing, make a joke. No, I cross my eyes at him. I'm a dork. Jason doesn't smile. "We should get back. Speech woman will be coming out to get you." But Jason doesn't circle his fingers on the joystick. He turns to a new page in his communication book. "My birthday party. Do you want to come?" The cards sit alone on the page, new and homemade. "My birthday party" has red and blue balloons and a chocolate brown cake. I don't know why.